Welcome. Today I have the great honor of interviewing Dr. Theda Scotchpole. She's the Victor S. Thomas Professor of Government and Sociology at Harvard University. At Harvard, she has served as Dean of the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences from 2005 to 2007, and as Director of the Center for American Political Studies from 2000 to 2006. Dr. Scotchpole, I'd love to take this time right now to thank you for doing this interview.
Happy to do it. Looking forward to speaking with you.
Yes. So, Dr. Scotchpole, I'd like to start off by mentioning that most argue that for Europe, Trump's election is a terrifying disaster. For instance, the New York Times recently released an article stating that Trump is rarely clear about his political beliefs, but it is clear that he has a long-held disdain of NATO. He views the Atlantic Alliance as a kind of international racket in which the members have to pay the American mob leader for protection. Moreover, his repeated suggestion that he would not come to the defense of the Baltic states if they have not been paying their bills is a growing concern, and it is argued that it is obviously an open invitation to Putin of Russia. So with all of your expertise and your knowledge, what impact will Trump's presidency have on NATO on an international scale?
Well, Trump's presidency is one of many things going on. There's the Brexit vote in Europe. There's the possibility that Marine Le Pen may win in France. This is definitely an unsettled time. I think it's wise to wait and see what the new Trump administration, which is being tossed together now on short notice, actually proposes to do. We don't even know who all of the key players are. I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump himself is a big talker, but has very little detailed knowledge of the implications of the things he's talking about. So his full set of advisors and what they hear from the various agencies in the U.S. government that they're in charge of is going to make a big difference. It's also important to note that there are Republicans in Washington, and the Republican Party is now completely in charge, who are really very critical of any undermining of NATO and any softness toward Putin's Russia. So they're going to be weighing in.
And the same article and various media stating that Putin's aim is to enhance Russia's power by undermining and destabilizing Western democracy. At the same time, there seems to be Russian fingerprints all over the American campaign season with timely cyber attacks and well-timed leaks. So, in your opinion, I mean, most people saw Hillary Clinton as being the obvious choice and as being someone who would represent the American people. Without a doubt, most people assumed that Hillary Clinton would be the next president of the United States of America. It came as a shock to most people to see Trump elected to serve as president. So with now him as the current president of the United States of America, where do you see the future of Western democracy?
Well, I mean, it's a period in which people who support democratic norms and institutions are going to have to hold firm. So in many ways, that's the answer. How firm will they hold? We've seen periods like this in the past. The early 1930s come to mind. Mm-hmm. And we saw that in those cases where nativist forces and ultimately fascist forces were on the rise, a lot of liberal and even leftist actors accommodated them. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to see this time around whether any authoritarian tendencies or corrupt tendencies that emerge in the Trump administration are firmly opposed. But I don't think it's time to panic. I think that would be not a good response. It's important for everybody across the world to remember that close to 2 million more people and still counting voted for Hillary Clinton for president of the United States. And Donald Trump starts with the biggest gap between the electoral vote, electoral college vote, but the state by state, and the national popular vote in U.S. history, and has one of the lowest popularity ratings ever for an incoming president. He has important deficits to make up, and we'll see whether he does.
And now, Dr. Scotchpole, a lot of your research has focused on U.S. politics and comparative and the historical perspective. You recently spoke at the Monk School of Global Affairs. This is where you discussed understanding the 2016 U.S. election. Can you please discuss the significance and the impact of getting more young people involved in politics on an international scale?
Well, it's very important. I think a lot of young people in the United States and in many countries across the globe are disconnected from electoral politics. I've heard young people in the United States say they didn't vote because they don't think it makes a difference. Well, I'll tell you what makes a difference, not voting. In this election, more than 60 million people, I think it's now close to 62 million, voted for Hillary Clinton, more than a million fewer than that voted for Donald Trump, but 100 million didn't vote at all, who could have voted. So both the political parties and the electorate have got to re-engage the process of choosing wise leaders, or else we'll be left with divisive leaders who undermine government and tear apart the societies they're elected to serve.
And now, in your presentation at the Monk School of Global Affairs, you compared Trumpism to Brexit. Can you discuss some of the similarities and differences affiliated with the two? We have a lot of young listeners and young professionals that tune into this podcast, Canada's NATO podcast, every week. So if you could just explain some of the main similarities and differences that you presented at the Monk School of Global Affairs, that would be greatly appreciated.
The similarity is that in both Britain and the November election in the United States, it appears that native-born whites living in less economically developed areas away from metropolises were the driving force in the victory of Brexit and the bare victory of Trump. So in that sense, it's a sort of non-metropolitan revolt. And in both countries, people in the more forward-looking, vibrant, economically vibrant, ethnically diverse cities, in the case of London, the one connected more to Europe as a whole, were very, very opposed to what happened. It's often said that this is about international trade. I don't believe that. I think international trade and international trade pacts and the impact they've had on societies is in the background of some of the economic decline that the communities that supported Brexit or Trump have been experiencing. And I also think immigration and the threat of international terrorism figure in these things. But at least in the United States, the votes for Trump were overwhelmingly across all lines of class and everything else from the non-metropolitan communities in just a handful of states. They're the ones that made the difference. Really, about 200,000 votes had gone another way in an electorate of 120 million. It would have been a different outcome. And as I say, the majority of Americans did not vote for him. So I think the victory of Trump was less decisive in numerical terms in the United States than the victory of Brexit in Britain. Of course, the consequences are much more tremendous because this is electing a president who controls all of the levers of the federal government because his very conservative, or at least very economically radical, party is also in charge.
And now I think I strongly feel that Trump being elected as the next president of the United States of America did come as a shock to not only many Americans, but people on an international scale. I know that here in Canada, I attended an election party, and when I found out that Trump was elected, I was shocked, because obviously seeing someone who, you know, is as controversial as he is, but also has such racist views in terms of immigration, in terms of gender equality, definitely came as a concern to me, but also his lack of experience and his lack of serving in politics. Obviously, Hillary Clinton, with her experience, a lot of people will argue that if Hillary Clinton was a man, then she would have been elected to serve as the president. And now a point that I want to make here is that oftentimes women in politics are exposed to many challenges similar to other professions, in academia, in the professional setting. In your opinion, what are your views on gender inequality in politics overall, and when will it come to an end?
Well, in the United States, fewer women run for office, and those that run for executive offices in particular have a harder time. I think there's no question that Hillary Clinton's gender weighed her down in this election. It's not that it was one big thing, but many little things. Many opponents, many leaders of key institutions were willing, including the New York Times and the director of the FBI, were willing to focus on her moderate flaws and exaggerate them compared to the massive flaws of Donald Trump. Now, I say that because the polls show that many of the voters who voted for Donald Trump actually don't believe he's as qualified to be president as Hillary Clinton. And so this is the votes for him were despite his American perceptions that he is not very well qualified to be president. And in many ways, what lay behind this was extreme partisan divisions in the United States now. Many Republicans came home to their party to vote for this man, even though they are uneasy about his qualifications. I don't think the world should conclude that Americans are overall racist. I do believe people with very with strong racial status worries did vote for Donald Trump in large number. But that's not all of his supporters, and it's important to remember that the majority of Americans do not feel that way at all.
Absolutely. And now, a lot of sources argue that now that Putin's preferred candidate has won the American presidential election, he most likely has his eye on two women in Europe. And he wants to see, obviously, Le Pen of the far-right National Front Party win France's presidency this spring. And Ms. Le Pen shares with Putin and Trump similar beliefs in terms of having hostility towards NATO and the European Union. And now, after that, Russia, a lot of critics argue that Russia is hoping that Ms. Merkel, his prime opponent in Europe, will be voted out of the office in Germany's elections next fall. So, obviously, with these individuals opposing and criticizing the European Union and NATO, what impact do you believe would be present if the relationship between Putin and Trump continues to enhance and prolong as time continues? Because a lot of people believe that Putin and Trump are good friends, but then Trump has denied being friends with Putin. He said he has made claims and statements that he views Putin as a well-respected leader, but he has denied making any negotiations with Putin himself. So for everyone listening to this podcast today, what impact do you think that the relationship between Putin and Trump, Russia and the United States, will perhaps have on the European Union and other countries internationally as a whole?
Donald Trump probably doesn't know Putin. But he says different things at different times. It's very, very clear that Donald Trump is one of the most narcissistic political leaders we've ever seen, and that's saying something.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody says something nice about him, he likes them, or at least says he does. But the important factors for thinking about the relationship of the Trump administration to Europe have to do with his advisors. Now, some of his advisors have very close relationships with Russian economic and political actors. So it may very well be that the Trump administration is going to cater to Putin's Russia. But I don't think Putin's Russia is a great power. I think it's a meddling power that is trying to cause trouble around the world. And I'm going to venture the opinion without a lot of expertise that it is far from the European Union's biggest problem. The European Union has problems in its own ranks. The relationship between Germany and the other countries, the handling of the economic common market, and the failure to recover in a robust way from the 2008-2009 recession, the exit or the threatened exit of Britain, which, by the way, is not yet a done deal, so we'll see. But I would take the rise of Marine Le Pen in France to be due to France-specific factors, to the terrible, terrible, terrible terrorist incidents that have occurred in France, which opened the door for another party to come to the fore. I think we need to keep our eye on Germany and Britain and the rest of the European Union. If the United States begins to withdraw from some of its international involvements, which Trump is threatening, that will offer opportunities to Europe if it can get its act together.